You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and I'm joined by Meg Hewings, writer, general manager of the Montreal Stars, Montreal's women's hockey team. So to start, I just was wondering if you could give us a bit of a picture of the last year for the Montreal Stars, because I know it's been a year of growth, many years of struggle to get to this point for the team. So maybe just highlight some of the key milestones this past year for the Montreal Stars.
Well, the Montreal club in the Canadian Women's Hockey League is now the top club in North America because last year the team was successful in winning the Clarkson Cup, which is the cup that was donated by the Governor General, Adrienne Clarkson, mm-hmm. to the top female club team in North America. Mm-hmm. And so Montreal won, and we had a terrific season. The players did a fantastic job of not only winning, the record I think was 30-4, so they won both the regular season, and then we went to go play at the Clarkson Cup, and they were also, they won in four straight games there and beat Toronto. For the Clarkson Cup, and it's the second time that Montreal has won. They're a very dominant club, very exciting team to watch. And the other exciting thing last year was really managing to get a lot more people out to games. We held a fundraiser game to collect funds for the Quebec Breast Cancer Foundation, and that was a very successful game where we had about 800 people out. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that Montreal has one of the best hockey clubs, mm-hmm. Not just in North America, but in the world. So, you know, mm-hmm. part of the fun is trying to invite more and more people out to see it.
And the team is composed of not only community members from Montreal, but that are celebrated hockey players in our own city, but also Olympians.
Yeah, that's right. We have the Montreal team is basically made up of, we think we have five. We'll have even more Olympians next year on the team, including last year we had Carolyn Ouellette, who's a power forward. We had Julie Chu, who was coaching in the U.S. She was playing for us, probably one of the best two-way defensive and forward players in the world. And we had also Sarah Viancourt, super exciting player to watch, lots of tricks and fun moves up her sleeve. And we had Kim St. Pierre as our goalie. Basically, what's happened in women's hockey now is mm-hmm. that you have a lot of fantastic skill that has come up through the university teams. And women, besides playing on the national team or those 20 spots, have nowhere to play except for this Canadian Women's Hockey League. So, they basically in 2007, the women got together and created a league for and by players. And the result is next year we'll have six teams in the league, some of the best hockey being played in the world. Mm-hmm. And really each of the teams from Boston, Toronto, three teams in Toronto and one out in Alberta next year are all made up of some of the best international players in the world. So right now you can, go to your local arena out east at Etienne des Marteaux where we play and see basically gold medal hockey game, right? Right in front of your eyes for $5, So it's kind of ridiculous, but I mean, what's really happened is that, Montreal has a great history of amazing, men hockey players, but the same is the case also in women's hockey. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of fantastic players, and right now this is the major team. The league sort of is aiming to become professional, but right now it's a very grassroots run and organized league. It's a nonprofit. And so, yeah, that's why, you can't go to an NHL game anymore. If you can afford to even get in, then you're going to go sit in the nosebleed section, and you probably can't afford to bring your family to it. So I think that's one of the amazing things about women's hockey right now is that, you can go to a local arena, pay $5, and see some of the best hockey in the world.
There's obviously a huge disconnect between the interest and the growing activity around women's hockey and the mainstream media coverage in relation to the game and the league. Obviously, corporate-dominated National Hockey League, NHL, is paraded around the press. Can you speak about this discrepancy in terms of interest by the mainstream media?
Well, you know, the mainstream press is very obsessed with the top pro male sports. So it's pretty rare to get articles or be featured on TV, for example. And unfortunately, it does a disservice to the quality and the skill that and the dedication and long kind of years and hours that a lot of these women have put into it. I mean, Carolyn Ouellette is, you know, she's a multiple Olympian. And so we have a team that's full of true stars in this game, but we get very little press coverage. That being said, you know, locally it's starting to change a little bit, and some of the community newspapers will follow the team more closely throughout the season, and bloggers and so on. But unfortunately, the sports media industry complex has been very much geared toward men's sports for a very long time now, and so it's much more difficult to get regular coverage in mainstream papers. And I mean, in the end, that has a lot to do with the fact it's actually short-sighted in terms of, you know, in many respects, actually, you know, it kind of ignores the wide range of sports fans that actually exist out there, and also fails to understand that there are many different forms of hockey that we like to watch. The fact that the CBC has kind of narrowly focused all their coverage for a very long time on the corporate NHL it actually ignores the wide range of styles and you know, types of hockey that are out there that people actually want to watch. And also, you know, the NHL just as of last year started to actually take women into consideration as sports fans, which is, you know, they've started to kind of create these sort of pink shirts that are branded through the NHL. And they basically, before that, just ignored women entirely as possible sports fans. And that's been happening for a very, very long time, when, in actual fact, there are lots of people that are sort of closet hockey fans that like the NHL but also like other kinds of hockey. And might be particularly interested in women's hockey because it showcases an international style of the game, which doesn't include hitting and fighting. The game's very wide open, and there's a lot of passing, a lot of spectacular goals. And, you know, it's still very physical, but and there's some contact, but there's no hitting or open ice hits, certainly no hits to the head. So you have a kind of very exciting form of the game that's super fast and it's thrilling to watch.
Maybe just talk a bit about that difference in terms of style of women's hockey and the NHL.
Well, you know, everyone's been complaining all season long and for many seasons now about the goonery that still takes place in the NHL, particularly around the head hits and, you know, seriously difficult things to watch. You know, you're watching some of these games, and to see a player knocked unconscious is nothing that, you know, no one wants to take their kid to see that game, and no one actually wants to be there to see that. I think player health and safety is something that the NHL really needs to take a look at, and I think that in many respects, the women's game is an exciting alternative to that, because you have a sport where there isn't open ice hits, where no fighting or checking is allowed. And I'm not, I mean, some people really like to have mix their boxing and their hockey, and they want to see those brawls, and the NHL banks on that. But what that does is exclude a whole range of other people who might want to see more of an international style of game that doesn't include that stuff, and maybe a more family-friendly kind of style of the game. And so, you know, I think that's very much where women's hockey can step in and you know, you can not only afford to bring your whole family to a game, but you can sit right up close. You can sit on the first, you know, in the first chair and see the action live. And after the game, you know, our players are always there to sign autographs. These are regular women. They have jobs. You know, they play hockey because they're passionate about it. And I think that they're members of their community. They do a lot of work in terms of raising money for charities. They're really decent people, and they're also kind of ambassadors for health and wellness at a time when we're becoming more and more unhealthy as people and as a population. So, you know, I think there's lots of things to recommend women's hockey, and I think it can appeal to a lot of people that have been turned off by the sport in general.
I'm interested in hearing about your choice to really focus on the Stars in women's hockey. You've been involved in all sorts of projects, former editor at The Hour, as a writer, graduate studies, very diverse experience, and right now you've given so much time and energy to the Stars. Maybe talk about some of the motivations for you and how those motivations to really focus and to try to develop women's hockey speak to your larger reflections on society and kind of the challenges we face collectively, you know, whether it's Montreal or Canada.
I think that the first time it really struck me to question hockey was when I was doing figure skating, and I hated figure skating. I had to wear all this garish makeup, and I just, you know, it was like unbearable to go every week to do this. But I saw boys playing hockey when I went to the arena, and my parents are nerds. They don't participate in sports at all. But I saw this, and I was like struck right away. I was like, I want to play that. And it took a lot of convincing. I convinced my dad to take me to girls' hockey, but we had to travel half an hour away to do it. At that arena, my local arena, there was no girls' hockey. So I think that was the first moment where I was like, oh, you know, why don't girls and women play hockey? And, you know, when I got to university and I played for the McGill Martlets, and I actually played 1 year in this developing pro league the year after that, I asked lots of questions, you know, about why was it that, you know, girls and women weren't in the media, they weren't, mm-hmm. women's sports wasn't covered or talked about in the same way. And I think, so, you know, it's been a sort of long-standing passion, but also a focus of study and reflection. Mm-hmm. And I think that more than anything, probably in Canada, we tout hockey as this thing which it might be the only national clue that we have, that in fact, I was shocked to discover that, well, women have been playing for more than 100 years, and in fact there have been leagues that were specifically catered to players of color, and that we have this wide-ranging history of people and communities that have played this game and done it in many different styles and ways. And so I think that there's no more kind of revolutionary place than the most mundane ones to really question how we can make changes in our society and how we want to be with one another and play together. And so I think that hockey's always been this one place where I keep coming back to, because I've learned a lot through it personally about how to get along with other people. It's a very complicated game that requires discipline and teamwork, and also individual effort. And so I think that, you know, it's not for nothing that we like this sport, but I think that there are ways that I've been attracted to the lessons that it continues to provide, and also the desire to change it and to see it evolve over time to actually incorporate a lot more people that it might have excluded in the past. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would love to play hockey, but it's expensive to play. It's not easy to find a place to play necessarily, or to feel like you're included when you step out on the ice. So for me, it ties in a lot of issues, social issues around who gets to belong, not just in the nation, but also at a very basic level, you know.
What are some reflections of yours on the relationship between the process of sport, a community sport, and how we build community outside of sports? I mean, sports obviously is a important, has always been an important gathering space. In Canada, hockey is one of the key points of that. It's been really corporatized. But with the Stars and the Women's Hockey League, obviously there's different directions developing very strongly. So I'm just wondering, what are some of your reflections on ideas of community and this process that you've been working on, mm-hmm. struggling with to really push the Stars?
Well, I think that what the Canadian Women's Hockey League is trying to do as a player-run and organized league is always to put players first, but also fans first. Mm-hmm. And I think there are ways that owners have really taken over professional male sports, and they've managed to get public subsidies to, be able to pay for their arenas. And so, I mean, I don't think that the project of a women's professional league will happen without community, without mm-hmm. Converting one single fan at a time to how amazing this game is. Well, I think the best example in many respects is that we're not actually covered by the Gazette very often. I've done a couple pieces for them, but or by CBC television all that often. But, you know, the Journal de Rosemont, for example, comes to check us out. So I think that despite the fact that you have, you know, a lot of Olympians and international caliber players playing, you know, girls come to see these games now. And boys, too. And their entire eyes light up to see women, or to see, you know, Carolyn Ouellette. They don't even distinguish between men and women anymore. They're really just like, wow, this is fantastic hockey. And we play at Étienne de Marteau rink, and it's named after Carolyn Ouellette. So her name is painted across the ice surface. And that's because she's done a lot, both in her community and at the international level, to raise awareness and be an ambassador for hockey in her community. So I think there are lots of ways in which this team is very much tied to Montreal, their Montrealness, in ways that now with the corporate NHL and the movement of players to any one city, you don't get that sense of place and locality anymore in your hockey. But there's something very specifically Montreal about the way that these women interact with one another. It's a very Franglais team. They have a kind of exuberance that's very much Québécoise, I guess. And they play nicely together. They enjoy each other's company, and it's visible on the ice. And I think that kind of quality and character of the sport is something we haven't seen in many decades because of the way that a more corporatized sports model has taken over, not just, you know, the big arenas, but also our public airwaves.
And given, I mean, this whole process that you're talking about and the rootedness of community around the Montreal Stars, I would imagine there's all sorts of layers of like accountability and relationships that exist to sustain the team and sustain a fan base that's genuine. Extending from that, these corporate gatherings really around the NHL, in Vancouver recently, it produced a lot of violence, social violence. There was a riot in downtown Vancouver. Many sort of ideas and theories have been circulating about why specifically that happened in Vancouver. It's a city not really known for riots, compared to Montreal.
Yeah.
Riot capital of Canada, maybe.
Yes, the hockey riot capital of Canada and the riot capital of Canada.
So in that, what happened in Vancouver just recently, I'm wondering, like, really, I'm interested in hearing your vantage point on that. Given the very different vibe you're describing around women's hockey, I'm wondering what your reflections are on the social violence we saw in Vancouver, given your deep involvement in a national hockey league in Canada, the Women's Hockey League.
I think some of the media have pointed this out, but what's most obvious is that it's not all, you know, Canucks fans that lost their head during those riots. I mean, if you watch the coverage of the actual game, people in the seats gave a standing ovation to Tim Thomas, the goalie on the Bruins. There was a lot of decent behavior that actually happened. The one thing to point out is that these riots sort of become possible when, you know, a couple of people who are drunken and, you know, upset or whatever, lose their minds and, you know, decide to behave badly, you know. So I think that separating the average fan from the rioter that loses their mind is probably a good place to start. Mm-hmm. But the reason why hockey and rioting have seemed to go together, I mean, if you have, you know, millions of dollars that you spend on advertising beer, you have these publicly sanctioned party zones in a city, and then you have a game seven where, you know, everything is on the line. It's sort of a recipe for, you know, having some kind of brawl. So I don't really see that it's all that strange in a way. What's more compelling is the sort of media focus, which has, in some instances, crazily suggested that these were anarchist protesters or something ridiculous like that, which is irresponsible to actual protesters. Mm-hmm. This is clearly a gang of probably way too inebriated sports crazies, you know? I mean, for the most part, from the footage I've seen, young men who gave themselves license to behave badly and act in violent and aggressive ways. So I think that what's really interesting, too, is the comparison. You had the G20 protests in Toronto where police use that as an excuse to do giant sweeps and arrest large numbers of protesting civilians who were acting civilly. And then in this instance, you had a huge downtown sector that was cordoned off for this kind of stuff, but, you know, a very different reaction to that. So I think that there's something in the culture of hockey, the unwritten code, for me, has always been a bit of a problem in NHL hockey in particular. I think the idea that you can bypass the rules, ideas around unwritten rules and codes, there's nowhere in society that we have these. I mean, you have laws and you don't, and you abide by them or you don't. And so I think that the ways in which the NHL has set up the sport so that you have these moments where you're allowed to behave badly on the ice, maybe also allow for moments outside of that to also occur. The other point is that you have someone like Don Cherry, who's very much a proponent of the kind of open ice hits and basically goonery that happens in NHL, and he sits from his pulpit in the CBC and very much advocates for that kind of not just hypermasculinity, but the continued vagueness around those unwritten codes. It allows for a kind of hypermasculinity and violence. Actually, it supports that. One of the things that really needs to happen in the NHL is for players to respect each other profoundly, like their own health and their own well-being. And everyone always says after someone's been hit that they didn't mean to do that. And that's fine, but if the rules were actually very set in stone from the beginning, then it wouldn't be so vague. Mm-hmm. And we'd be able to just, you know, someone would get a suspension, whether or not you intended to do it. And that would cut back on all of these instances of violence, in my opinion.